The Mysteries of Paris, Volume 4 by Eugène Sue. Chapter 1. Rigolette's First Sorrow. Part 1. Rigolette's apartment was still in all its extreme nicety. The large silver watch placed over the mantelpiece in a small boxwood stand denoted the hour of 4. The severe cold weather having ceased, the thrifty little needlewoman had not lighted her stove. From the window, a corner of blue sky was scarcely perceptible over the masses of irregularly built roofs, garrets and tall chimneys, which bounded the horizon on the other side of the street. Suddenly a sunbeam, which, as it were, wandered for a moment between two high gables, came for an instant to purple with its bright rays the windows of the young girl's chamber. Rigolette was at work, seated by her window, and the soft shadow of her charming profile stood out from the transparent light of the glass as a cameo of rosy whiteness on a silver ground. Brilliant hues played on her jet-black hair, twisted in a knot at the back of her head, and shaded with a warm amber color the ivory of her industrious little fingers, which plied the needle with incomparable activity. The long folds of her brown gown, confined at the waist by the bands of her green apron, half concealed her straw-seated chair, and her pretty feet rested on the edge of a stool before her. Like a rich lord who sometimes amuses himself in hiding the walls of a cottage beneath splendid hangings, the setting sun for a moment lighted up this little chamber with a thousand dazzling fires, throwing his golden tints on the curtains of gray and green stuff, and making the walnut tree furniture glisten with brightness, and the dry-rubbed floor look like heated copper, whilst it encircled in a wirework of gold the grisette's birdcage. But alas, in spite of the exciting splendor of this sunray, the two canaries, male and female, flitted about uneasily, and, contrary to their usual habit, did not sing a note. This was because, contrary to her usual habit, Rigolette did not sing. The three never warbled without one another. Almost invariably the cheerful and matin song of the latter called forth that of the birds, who, more lazy, did not leave their nests as early as their mistress. Then there were rivalries, contentions of clear, sonorous, pearly, silvery notes, in which the birds had not always the advantage. Rigolette did not sing, because, for the first time in her life, she experienced a sorrow. Up to this time, the sight of the misery of the Morels had often affected her, but such sights are too familiar to the poorer classes to cause them any very lasting melancholy. After having almost every day succored these unfortunates as far as was in her power, sincerely wept with and for them, the young girl felt herself at the same time moved and satisfied. Moved by their misfortunes, and satisfied at having shown herself pitiful. But this was not a sorrow. Rigolette's natural gaiety soon regained its empire. And then, without egotism, but by a simple fact of comparison, she found herself so happy in her little chamber, after leaving the horrible den of the Morels, that her momentary sadness speedily disappeared. This lightness of impression was so little affected by personal feeling, that, by a mode of extremely delicate reasoning, the grisette considered it almost a duty to aid those more unhappy than herself, that she might thus unscrupulously enjoy an existence so very precarious and entirely dependent on her labor, but which, compared with the fearful distress of the lapidary's family, appeared to her almost luxurious. "In order to sing without compunction, when we have near us persons so much to be pitied," she said naively, "we must have been as charitable to them as possible." Before we inform our reader the cause of Rigolette's first sorrow, we are desirous to assure him, or her, completely as to the virtue of this young girl. We are sorry to use the word virtue, a serious, pompous, solemn word, which almost always brings with it ideas of painful sacrifice, of painful struggle against the passions, of austere meditations on the final close of all things here below. Such was not the virtue of Rigolette. She had neither deeply struggled nor meditated. She had worked and laughed and sung. Her prudence, as she called it, when speaking frankly and sincerely to Rodolphe, was with her a question of time. She had not the leisure to be in love, particularly lively, industrious, and orderly.